Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Yachting International Radio. This is Diversity in Yachting, and I'm your host, Gabriella. Today, we have a special guest here. His name is Marcus Asante, and he is the founder of Universal Sailing Club in Chesapeake Bay. Welcome to the show. It's nice to have you.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much, Gabriella. Really.
I'm so happy that you made some time for me today because you have so many interesting things to educate us about, to talk about, some things to get off your chest. So why don't you start by telling us what you do, where you're located, and how you got started in boating?
All right. Well, that's pretty good stuff right there. That's quite a handful or a mouthful or I don't know. Plenty going on there anyway. So let's see here. So what do I do? I do many things, but my day job is typically as a marine technician. So I'm on a boat every day. I'm working on some boat problem somewhere, typically on the Chesapeake, pretty much every day of my life. I try to take some time off. Some of the work is physically demanding. Right now I'm working on a number of restorations. I'm rebuilding an engine, a small diesel. So, and on and on. I could go on about my work all day about that.
No, but really, I don't really know what a marine technician is, to be honest. So, please, enlighten me.
Okay, yeah. So, essentially, back in the day, you would call that person the mechanic.
Okay.
But today, we don't really use that term. It's sort of, in the marine industry, it's kind of antiquated. The idea of a mechanic brings about a guy with a gray shirt on with his name on it in some garage. Car or truck.
Right.
And that's kind of what we do, but we do many, many other things regarding, the maintenance and upkeep for a vessel. And this is, recreational vessels, power and sail. In my case, I am a landing school graduate. I'm a graduate of the Marine Systems Program in the landing school in Arundel, Maine. So it's a well-known school that teaches yacht design, boat building, both traditional and modern boat building, and marine systems, which I'm a graduate of the Marine Systems Program. And just as a little side note here, I may be the first African-American to ever attend the landing school.
That is actually not surprising to me.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of interesting. I wasn't really expecting that. When I got there, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, sometimes, you can expect it or not. It can go either way sometimes because the school had been in existence for over 30 years when I got there. And this was, 7-8 years ago. So now, here we are, and there's many other Africans, Afro-Caribbeans, and other, well, some of them, maybe not many, but there, I asked people while I was there, had you seen any other African-Americans or any Afro-descendants at all? And they had not. No, the dean, none of the instructors, like no one there had ever seen. Now, that's no big deal for me. I mean, I'm used to being a pioneer and I'm used to sort of being the first and all that kind of stuff. But maybe the only one, particularly in an industry like this, we do understand that, we weren't handed it. It wasn't handed to us. I kind of had to work my way up the ladder, do many, many different things and create new vehicles within the community to do things that I thought needed to happen that, were not there for us. So anyway, back to the marine technician stuff. So, I do a variety of electrical work, which could be troubleshooting and recommending the next GPS or chart plotter installation. It could also be satellites, sat nav. I mean, it could be anything.
Wow.
So I do a lot of electrical. I also do a fair amount of, paint, gel coat, restorations, a lot of rebuilding, refashioning, reconstructing.
So you're just like Mr. Fix-It guy, and if there's ever a problem on your boat, you probably can fix it.
I probably can, and I'll know if it's beyond me, then I'll know where to send it and who to send it to, I'll know where to go to take care of these problems. Yeah, so it is kind of like that kind of work, but we in my case, I'm sort of center stern. I may be with you with the purchase of the vessel. I may be with you all along with all the repairs that you're doing and managing the maintenance schedule of the vessel. And then when you come to sell the boat, I'm there again to help you sell the boat and get you into the next one.
So,
for some of my customers, I'm stem to stern with them rather than just a one-off solving of a problem here or there.
Absolutely. So you kind of walk them through the whole process and you're just very hands-on. You're involved in every part, literally, of the boat and then the process of selling the boat and getting it going. Really?
That's right. If they want it, if they desire my involvement that far, they can certainly get that. And I'm glad to be with them. You know, I'm always grateful to get the phone call, and as long as the phone keeps ringing.
Yeah.
And even if you're coming in, you know, it's always a good thing. So I'm glad that people enjoy my company, as it were.
You are the director of Marine. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Marine Arts Workshop. So that's the
Marine
business.
Arts Workshop.
Mm-hmm. So that's okay. The name of the business. And then Universal Sailing Club is our sort of, you know, we're 20 years old this year now. So it's our, you know, we're one of the few African-American sailing clubs in the country.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about that. How did the idea come to you? How'd you get into boating? And then how was Universal Sailing Club birthed, if you will? Like,
how did that
even happen? Because, you know, on the show, we discuss the diversity in yachting and boating and or lack thereof. So I'm always curious to find out how a young African-American man even ended up on a boat in the first place and starting their own sailing club.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, so I don't know how I ended up on a boat either. I just sort of landed there. No, I'm totally kidding. It was a very let's say, how do I say this here? It was really by design. I had this vision, you know, I had a vision of the future, but it ended up being a little different than what it actually is. You know, what that vision really was. I mean, you know, you never know what tomorrow's going to bring. But nonetheless, I started kayaking. I canoed and kayaked for years. I was a paddler before I knew anything about sailing, power boats, anything like that. I was paddling kayaks and canoes around and having a good time. I left the corporate world and I took a job at an educational and history-related institution. So this was a Baltimore Museum of Industry. So I took a job as a tour guide there, and that's right on Baltimore Harbor. It's right on the waterfront. So I was looking at the water every day.
Yeah.
So I started canoeing with a friend there. And then from there, I got my own kayak and started kayaking quite a lot on the Chesapeake. And I was a very active kayaker, subscribed to Canoe and Kayak magazine, was out there paddling, take my friends around. I had a tandem kayak, so I could stick somebody else in there.
Yeah.
I'd rent canoes with my friends and do different things. And I was pretty happy being a kayaker for a couple of years until I saw some people sailing past me on the river downtown. And I said, well, wait a minute. I had already seen the boats, but this time that day, I just got another look at it for some reason. And the boats were going by. And that guy was just holding a tiller sitting there, and he was going 3-4 times faster than me paddling. And I said, well, wait a minute, that guy's not doing anything. And he's
just you know, I actually know what you're talking about now. A week ago, had you used the word tiller, I would have had no clue what you're talking about. But I took my first sailing lesson last weekend. I was jibing and tacking.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I was sailing. I was the one sitting on the tiller. And I swear my instructor wanted to kill me. Like, I swear that poor guy, he hates me. But I learned how to sail. I just thought you would be proud.
I am. That is great news for you. Of course, we did hear about that and one of your posts on Facebook there. So that was pretty cool that you let us know that, you know.
It was raining. It was freezing. I was sitting there shaking like a chihuahua. I was like, it was raining hard. And you know, it doesn't really rain like that in San Diego. So I thought it was the apocalypse. I had no idea what was happening, but yeah, I froze. I did it. And I thugged it out too. You know, I was like, this is what it feels like to be a real sailor, huh?
It that's true. That is true. We do suffer more than we should sometimes.
I'm going to have to invest in some waterproof clothing. I'm going to have to toughen up because I was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
To say the
least. Yeah, that's right. So you do need proper gear. That's very important. Obviously, you go to West Marine or whatever your local retailer.
I need to be sponsored by that one brand, the expensive one that I can't afford. It has the two H's.
There's a bunch of them. You know, Helly Hansen, Gill.
That one. Mm-hmm. That one I can't afford yet, but I feel like that would be some good gear. So if anyone's watching from that brand, please send me some gear.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah. Helly Hansen is worldwide. I mean, Gill is a British company. They're worldwide. I mean, they're all over the place. And you know, Helly Hansen has a full line of gear. They have snow and hiking and all kinds of stuff. So just make sure if you go to Helly that you get the sailing related stuff.
Okay.
There are key differences there. You know, you can wear a ski jacket on a boat, but there are key differences in the sailing gear that are specific to the needs of the sailor in terms of walking around, the ergonomics of moving around the vessel. And also what can catch something, you know, like, you know, the boat is a tight space. It's easy for a pocket to get caught in and so on something. And so the boat, the gear is designed to minimize that sort of stuff too. So
it was such a cool experience. I can see how you fell in love with sailing. It was really, we were in the middle of there was a regatta going on as well. So I got to see everybody racing. I keeled a little too much. I almost knocked my crewmates overboard a couple times. I learned how to do like donuts, like 360s, but that was on accident. It just kind of happened that way. When I was docking, my first time ever, the skipper said, hard over. And I didn't know what that meant. And I nearly crashed into the dock. And then I almost crashed into a yacht. And then I ran in a circle and I actually docked totally fine the second time. But I was thinking about you because I was like, okay, I can see why someone would fall in love with this sport and want to introduce other people to this exhilarating experience. So when you saw the guy going by on the sailboat and you were like, he's not doing anything and he's going faster than me, I want to do that. How did you take your first steps to like get involved? Did you even know where to go or who to talk to?
I paddled up to one of those boats one day and I found out that they were teaching kids, you know, and I saw the kids on the boat. And I asked him, I said, well, what's this program? What are you guys doing? Where is it? And he told me where it was. He said, oh, just go back there and make a right. And then you'll run into the sailing school back there. So I did. And so for the first season or so, I would just go take my kayak back in there and just walk around and see who I could meet and see if I could, you know, meet a friend or somebody, just somebody to help me out, you know, that sort of thing. And it took me over a year actually to actually get a job there. I kind of just stayed on the scene and kept going in and kept trying to meet people and kept going. And they didn't know who I was. I'm probably the first black guy to actually paddle a boat up to the school. I mean, this was probably a first as well. They had never seen this. So, you know, I was sort of all the buzz for a second there. You know, they're like, who is this guy? People in Baltimore didn't do things like that. They were scared of the water. Typically, the water's very dirty. It's very post-industrial in Baltimore at the time, so it's all these old sort of rotting factories. And people did not have a very good impression of the harbor at that time. And so it was seen as like you're out of your mind in a little kayak, like right next to all that dirty, toxic water that everybody's scared of. So I didn't have this attitude at all. I didn't care. I was just out there having a good time. And so either way, I eventually did get a job at that place. And it was a part-time little summer job. And then through there, I started meeting sailors. And it took me a while to even get somebody to take me sailing. Because the sailing school was for kids. And it wasn't for, and I was probably in my mid to late 20, maybe 26, 27 at the time. So there was nothing there for me. You know, it was just like, you know, there were adult teachers, adult sailing instructors, and then the kids. They were typically middle schoolers. So I was like, man, there's really nothing here for me. So I need an adult to just kind of just take me out. And it took me about a year for that to happen. Eventually, someone eventually did. And the lady took me out on a JY-15, a little centerboard. And so it was my first experience sailing. And then from there, I was totally hooked, of course. And I knew I would be. And then I eventually moved towards getting my own boats. And I eventually worked up came from a 21 to a 26-footer to a 30-footer. And now I have a 36-foot sail.
Wow. So you fell in love with sailing and then you looked around and you're like, wait, I'm the only black guy here. Wait, why are there no black yacht clubs or no black sailing clubs? Like, how did you pick up on that? And did people say things to you about it? Like, why are you sailing? Or who got you into this? Are you married to a white lady? Like, you know, what was that experience like? And how did you notice that there was a need for brown and black people in this space?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I've been a student of history for a long time. So as I was getting into this, it's one of the reasons why I took a job at the Museum of Industry, because I wanted to learn more of the history of Baltimore and of Maryland. And from that standpoint, it's industrial history too, which is, you know, which is central to the personality of the town, you know, old school blue collar sort of town. And that's really central to how people see the world. So I wanted to learn more about that. I'm not originally from Baltimore, I'm from Pennsylvania originally. So, you know, being kind of new to that space and everybody was looking to learn anything. So I knew that the history there was like seismic. I mean, it was like the amount of black history there, and it's bigger than just Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass, who are two Marylanders or who are well known into history, but there's much more to it than that. And I could see that this, what I've referred to, and I've done lectures on this topic over the years as well, because it, you know, the Chesapeake Bay is sort of this crosswaters of history. There's many things with the intersection of Indians and early Europeans. There's the intersection of the Africans at Jamestown, which is the James River, which is on the lower Chesapeake. You know? Okay. So all this stuff is right there, sitting right there. And then, of course, you have, you know, the whole Harriet Tubman thing. And both of these people back then, of course, they were born, you know, at a time when sailboats were very common and sort of the early steam age, and steamships had not really come into their own quite yet at that time, if at all, and at that time. So sailing is sort of central to the life of the people at that time. Both Tubman and Douglas found their way to Baltimore on small sailboats, you know. Of course, they were not skipping these boats. They were cargo, along with, you know, little Fred. He was sent to Baltimore to be a playmate. This is the boy who became Frederick Douglass, who he was sent to Baltimore from one arm of the family, the rural arm of the family, to the city part of the family. And he was sent there to be a playmate for the white child of that family. And so that's how he got to Baltimore. But he was sent there on a small sailboat that was carrying a shipment of hogs.
Wow. And that's
how little Fred, the slave boy Fred, first saw Baltimore. Of course, he recounts this in his numerous autobiography.
Yeah.
So I was kind of living that same life, just at a whole different time, and not as a captive person per se, but sort of, you know, mentally trapped in all the things that you're not supposed to do and what Black people don't do and all that. You know, that kind of captivity, you know, the fact that no one was there to say, hey, go for that. Hey, don't worry about what people think. Do that. Well, nobody said that to me.
Yeah.
And I had to just go out there and do it. I knew it was the right thing. I knew that I was on the right path because I knew enough history. And I felt as though I was sort of, I don't know, standing on the shoulders of the giants, you know, somewhat. And I felt it buoyed my confidence a bit.
Yeah.
So, because I didn't have a lot of people. So once I started meeting these other Black sailors that were in town that I would see here and there, and then, you know, I got us all together, and then I brought on Michael Campbell, who became our co-founder, who was a lifelong sailor from Long Island, grew up sailing long before I knew anything about it, and even before I was born. So he had been sailing for quite a long time. He was really a perfect guy. He's a smart dude, very hardworking, a lot of energy. And so he brought in a cohort of guys from south of Baltimore, that were part of his circle of friends, and then our sort of membership doubled. And then I got these guys together and I said, hey, look, man, I'll create this thing. I'll name it, we'll create it, we'll go ahead and put a schedule out, I'll start writing press and sending out some sailing magazines and stuff like that, which they printed my stuff like verbatim. I'm talking about local Chesapeake-based sailing magazines. And they printed my stuff verbatim at that time, which I was so happy about that. About our updates and stuff like that. I said, listen, I'll go ahead and I'll start this thing. We'll get it going. Because the meetings were in my basement at the time. And I said, on one condition, that we're going to go through a trial year. This is our 20th anniversary this year. So 2001 was our first official year. But 2000 was a trial year for us. And I told these guys, I said, look, man, I'll go ahead and go through all the work to create this thing. But I got to make sure that we can actually sail with each other without smashing up everything, arguing, bickering, all the stupid stuff. I said, look, if we can just be safe sailors, competent sailors, get from A to B and back, A to B to C and then back safe, you know, and if I see we can do a year cool without killing each other, then I'll go ahead and put it out. And we had a fantastic year in 2000. And so that meant that 2001 was our sort of inaugural birth year, as it were. Yeah.
Well, congratulations. Happy anniversary. That's a pretty cool story. Like I always wondered, were you intimidated at all? Did people laugh at you? Like, yeah, that's not going to happen. Like, did you feel at times like I don't belong in this world? This is not my world. And, you know, if so, how did you overcome those thoughts?
Yeah, we heard, and I still hear these things from some of the old timers from time to time. You know, they call us blow boaters, and you guys, you slow boaters, you blow boaters and all that kind of stuff. You know, you know, so it's stink pots versus blow boaters, right? In terms of power versus sail. And we know the differences there are legion. But I have many powerboat customers. I'm friends with a lot of powerboat clubs. I work on a number of different big powerboat engines and stuff like that all the time. So I'm used to the powerboat world as well. But I don't let them intimidate me, because I tell them very honestly, hey, listen, guys, I can drive your twin engine powerboat, and that's easy for me. But for you to get on my sailboat, start tacking and jiving and sailing it somewhere without an engine, I don't think you would be able to do that so easily. So, you know, so that's what I tell them, you know, because we've heard all the jokes, you know, and we did hear this from certain people. Some of the Chesapeake Bay is sort of the home of black yachting in a sense, because there are 5 black yacht clubs on the Chesapeake.
Wow. Including,
okay. So the other 4 are all power boaters, and those clubs are all over 50 years old.
Oh.
So we have what we believe is the greatest concentration of black yacht clubs in one area of water, and also the oldest black yacht clubs in the nation, which we do know that are on the Chesapeake as well. These guys are great friends of mine and cool, very cool dudes as well. And they have physical yacht clubs, some of them. Like, they have a building and a marina out back. We're a paper club. Our club is a paper club. We don't have any assets or property. We're just a group of sailors.
Yeah.
Get a chance to work with each other and sail from here to there and have a good time.
That's great. I had no idea. Like, I've never heard of a black yacht club. To me, growing up, anything with the word yacht club in it sounded very rich and very white. So I didn't grow up with sailing or boating in my peripheral, because there were certain activities that were reserved for the privileged. So tennis, golf, yachting, sailing just wasn't in my, it didn't exist to me, because it was in a different socioeconomic class, you know?
Indeed.
So yeah. Do you feel that a lot of African Americans and people, black indigenous people of color, think the same way or similarly to the way I do?
It's very common. Even today, it's still very common. I still hear those kind of comments, you know, how did you do this? And, you know, what are you doing? Are you trying to be white or something like that? I still, from time to time, I hear these kind of things, but they just don't know my background. They don't know all the work that we've been doing in this arena over the last 20 years. For my part, it's been a great deal of education. I've been a maritime studies teacher. I've worked at many sailing schools. I've worked at numerous environmental institutions that care for the land and that sort of thing. So I've done a lot in the educational sector. And much of which it does involve boating, boating safety, and boating education. So, you know, I've just been out there doing the work. But me personally, and everybody knows this about me, that I understand these biases and the fact that we didn't come from it and stuff like that. I totally don't come from it. Well, so I get all of those concerns, and I knew I'd be facing all that, and I knew I'd have to be sort of a cheerleader for a cause that nobody really understood. So, and I knew that going in, and I said, well, I'm the guy for the job, and I just took it head on, and I didn't care what anybody thought.
Yeah.
Because I said, I felt like through our actions, and then through my own actions, we could prove all the naysayers wrong, you know? And that's what we've been doing. For my part, I have demystified sailing for many people.
Yeah.
And I have also taken the elitism out.
Yes.
Okay? Yeah. I'm quite capable, as you know, I can speak quite that way if I choose to or am in that company. And I can throw off 19th, 18th century English, you know, very easily sometimes. But the, I do joke that I'm, you know, actually 854 years old right now. So I've been around a long time, and, you know, I've seen a lot of things change.
I get that feeling from you. This isn't your first rodeo. You've been around on this planet for centuries.
That's right. And we are, in fact, kind of reliving some of our ancestors in a way. I think when we're on a boat, and even in your sector, the yachting sector, you know, as long as you're out there in the fresh air and you're enjoying that kind of freedom, you know, some of your ancestors are happy inside you. They're smiling inside you. You know, that's why you're smiling when I say this, because you know it's true.
I know what you're talking about.
Something in there that's like, there's some happiness in there.
Absolutely.
And that's important too for the you know, to carry that on, to carry that bit of happiness on. I'm totally happy about that. But I've demystified it for a lot of people. And I've taken the elitism out of it. And what we attract naturally, being a yacht club, we do attract people who would rather be elitist sometimes. And again, you know, they run into problems with me personally. I'm not the commodore of the club now. I don't tell people what to do. I'm not even on the board at the moment. But there are board members that talk to me. And I, you know, I do get courtesy calls here and there if someone feels that I should be aware of something.
Yeah.
And so I don't throw my weight around, but when I have to, I certainly will. But we've had great leadership over the years. I haven't had any need to like step on any toes or anything like that, generally speaking. But
essentially, we just needed someone to carve out the path So do you work with any, do you have like a nonprofit, or do you work with any that, you know, educates children and exposes them to the boating world or sailing world or anything in that realm?
Sure thing. Yes. I mean, I, as you know, I have a long background in that sort of thing. So naturally the club would have that sort of orientation. You know, we do a yearly event every year, which is like a youth day. And we invite kids from and even our families' kids, you know, from around wherever, and put them on our own boats and have a good time out. And it's kind of casual. We're not really teaching sailing or anything heavy. It's just, you know, a chance for the kids to have a good time. They certainly learn along the way, but yep. They're not there to learn. They're really there to just have a good time and have some fun on the water in a way that with their own family, their own friends, their own sort of folks that they have seen and heard. And then Marine Arts Workshop has been a part of a number of youth events over the years as well, and that's we're always going to continue to do that to the best that we can. COVID has put a wrench in some of that activity, obviously, put the brakes on everything,
but yeah,
we'll just see how the future goes. I'm not sure quite how that's going to look. A lot of my orientation to education is very hands-on, it's out of the classroom. Get out of the house, get away from the screens, and come out in nature and interface with, you know, Mother Nature, interface with the wind, the waves, the salt smell, you know, and there's a lot of learning there as well. Let nature be one of your teachers, as I often say.
Yeah, absolutely. This is something that you learn by doing, and just practice and consistency, exposure. Are you working on any projects at the moment, or is COVID just kind of, you know, you're just chilling, waiting to see what's going to happen with COVID?
Yeah, I'm not doing any youth-related projects at the moment, right? Because, you know, when you're dealing with other people's kids, obviously sailing is inherently risky, right? You're inviting risk into your life. And that's part of the challenge of doing that sort of work, you know, because you want the young person to tackle some of that risk and to come out, you know, a winner on the other side, you know, and that's a big part of your self-esteem and how you view things, because you start the day thinking one thing and you end the day thinking something totally different.
Yeah, when it comes to, I got my butt.
You know how it is. And if it's a black kid and they look at me as an instructor, or and everybody is black, that has a huge impact on
it. It does.
We were those kids. I was one of those kids. So were you.
Yeah.
So, you know, we know what that means because we already expect sort of others to be in the lead there. And then if you see us in the lead there, it's like, oh man, I really can do this now. Oh yeah, this is feasible now. Oh, I can see myself doing it, you know.
And that's what
as people say, if you can't see it, you can't be it. And for a lot of young people, that is true. That we obviously we'll have exceptions to that, but right. For a lot of young people, they do need to see a black person doing something to give them that psychological permission, particularly for something like
it's subliminal. And it's subliminal, and it is very impactful. And I think that's what people aren't understanding, especially in the yachting industry. With, you know what I mean? I mean, I don't think people understand the impact and how important it is to have black faces on adventure magazines, advertisements for adventure gear, sailing magazines. It's sending a statement. And if everyone that graces the pages of these advertisements and magazines is just white, it tells us that we don't belong in that world, and it needs to change. And that's the point of this show, because I want someone to see it and be like, oh wow, like I was a black sailor. I saw a black sailor. It exists, you know? It's just to bring awareness that we are out here, we exist. And yeah, you might not see it on Below Deck or on TV or, you know, in the magazines, but that they're out there. You know, I'm meeting black captains, black female captains, you know, like they're there. We just need to make it visible, and we need to normalize seeing brown and black people in these positions, you know, because it does make a huge impact on our youth. And I think that needs more, like it needs to be focused, definitely needs to be exposed.
Agreed. I mean, when you come to Baltimore, you know, Baltimore is a majority black city. Baltimore is still over 60% African-American population. So therefore there are a lot of black boaters and sailors in the Baltimore region. And this is true for the Chesapeake in general. You know, there's a lot of DC African-Americans who have boats in Annapolis. There's a lot of historic connections between those two places among the African-American community. So here in the Chesapeake, you know, it's more common than what you're seeing in Southern Cal for sure. And we know, we have friends there. And so we know what they have told us and what's going on there, but I'll introduce you to some of those guys. And
please do.
Again, because they know us and they're on the Black Sailors Facebook page as well. Matter of fact, one of the guys came to Baltimore last year and ended up jumping on a boat and catching a sail with me. So he had, you know, come from California to Maryland, just happened to be on business and pleasure. And it was our Black Sailors Network that and how he ended up on my boat. So yeah, that's cool too. It's like family. We try to treat it like family. And it's great because I've been able to do the same thing in California. I ended up sailing with a friend of mine out of Marina Del Rey some years ago because it's just cool like that. We're just family.
And that's what it's about. That's what we're trying to do here is make a community and a network. It's not to be exclusive, but it's kind of to catch up with everybody else that's been in this industry. They've had their networks and their connections for years. You know, it's just now it's good to have a community of people that are doing it, that look like you, that are carving a path for you, you know, that have done this years ahead. Like now I know if I wanted to go that route, I know who I can reach out to now and ask for advice. You know, when before I wouldn't know, you know? So, I mean, I think what you're doing is great. I can't wait to come out there and go sailing with you and show you my diving skills.
Oh yeah. Oh, can you tell me what kind of boat were you sailing?
It was a 22-foot keel boat. I don't know.
You don't know the make and model?
I don't know any of that stuff. This is all new to me.
Was it a Tanzer? If I said the name, 22. Did it have an actual cabin down below, like a miniature cabin, or was it just like a space to throw like sails into?
No, it was like a little mini cabin. You could go in there and sit down. Like it was big enough.
Was it a Capri 22?
That sounds familiar.
Catalina 22 or Capri 22?
Those sound familiar.
Okay. All right. I'm trying to get a feel for the quote. Yeah. So next time I'm going to answer this question again, and you always want to know the make and model of the boat you're sailing, because that's important. There's hundreds and hundreds of boats out here, and I have the pleasure of having sailed many of them and worked on many of them, so I know the differences in some of the big boats.
Okay. Well, I have another lesson this upcoming weekend. I'll get all that information. I also have to take an 80 question test to get my certificate. And so I'll update you and let you know how that goes. But all right, well, we're running out of time. Unfortunately, I could talk to you forever about this stuff. But yeah, I was saying, I think what you're doing is great. I think, you know, getting youth involved and exposing, you know, children to this world is an amazing thing. So thank you for all that you're doing. And thank you for your time. Thank you for joining us today on Diversity in Yachting. And, you know, we'll talk again.
We certainly will, and I really appreciate the opportunity. It's been great talking with you, and it's, you know, our previous conversations have also been very enlightening. I'm glad that you're out here having this discussion, bringing these topics, you know, out into the world, and it's just a beautiful thing to witness and to see, and we're so glad you're doing this podcast. It's great that you have the support that you have from the sectors of the yachting industry that you have it. So, I mean, it's just a wonderful thing. I can't congratulate you enough. I can't support you enough. And that's why I'm here, obviously. So,
aww.
You know, we're going to continue to, you know, encourage you to keep doing the great work you're doing.
Thank you.
Of course, I'm doing mine. You know, I'm out here doing it, you know, hook or crook. You know what I mean? I don't care. Yeah. Storms, you know, rain. I don't care. I'm still in here doing the work. I'll try to do it as long as I can, as long as my back will allow me. Because I have a lot of boat injuries that have been multiplying over the years. None of them are getting any better. But either way, it's a great thing. I mean, I really appreciate
it. Thank you.
You're wonderful. I really appreciate you reaching out to us. Like,
well, thank you for being here. Thank you for your time. Thank you for educating me. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Diversity in Yachting on Yachting International Radio. Again, this is Marcus Asante, and I'm Gabby. So tune in for next week's show and stay tuned.
Thank you, Gabby.
Thank you.